Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Southfield. I'm glad you're here today. Would you please stand this morning and sing out with us? When my hope and strength is gone,
oh.
Amen. We serve a great God, don't we? He is good all the time, and he is just so awesome. Let's continue to sing to him. I'm not sure how you're feeling, but I think this world is just becoming more and more uncomfortable to live in, and that's great, because you know what? We're not here on this journey. We're not physical people here, are we? We're spiritual beings on a physical journey, and so this morning we're going to introduce to you a new song that you've heard, if you're able to watch some of these videos, and it's Come Lord Jesus, or Even So Come, and so I'm excited to bring this to you. We're excited to do it with you finally, so just sing out when you can.
Jesus is come. eyes on him. All eyes on him. You know, in the morning when I pray, I have a series of verses that I pray, and I conclude with one from the book of Revelation that says, "He who is faithful witness to these things says, behold, I am coming soon." And then John says, "Come quickly, Lord Jesus." And every time I read that, I look to the sky. And when I do, I say it. And then I give Jesus at least 20 good reasons why it should be today. Today, right now. And one of these days, he's going to listen to me on the spot. And he's going to break through. And we are going home. So you can have a seat right now. Go ahead and have a seat. As you do, I want to welcome you today. We have a bunch of kids back from Green Lake, which is a lot of fun. They work like crazy. So if you see nappers today, napping gets a special indulgence. That's okay. You're good to go, all right? But we are so glad for the week that they were able to spend working and getting to know each other and building community. It's awesome. When you walked in, you were given a folder. On the inside, there's a card. And a little bit, when you're able to, go ahead and put your name on that. And then if it's your first time, save that and bring it to the door because we have a gift we want to give you. And for those of you that are talking about getting baptized in August, several of you are planning on that. On the back side, there's a place for you to sign up for a baptism seminar that we're going to be offering. Just a one-time thing. We're offering it three times, but you only have to come once. And it's offered on during Sunday morning, I think on July 14th, and then Tuesday night, July 17th. So if one of those fits for you, make sure you check that off, and you'll be good to go. So we've had this summer on the soul. We're working through not only the book by John Ortberg on soul keeping, but just some good teaching on Sunday morning. Jason talked to us last week. I've been driving around looking for him all week long running so I could honk and distract him. Had no luck. But anyway, it's just been a great time to be able to hear different voices. And today you get to hear a unique voice. Let me give you a little bit of history. It was 20 years ago this Sunday that I preached my last sermon at a church in St. Louis. And I look at 20 years of a stretch here, and you might wonder, okay, what does Dennis list as accomplishments? What are the things? What's happened here? You know, the changing of a culture of a church, the building of a building. What does he view as accomplishments? I have four accomplishments. One, that in all these years of ministry, I have a marriage that is still strong and growing instead of one that is withered on the vine. And I've been able to do this with a partner who I love, who provides me more and more comedy every day. Just ask my daughter. And then I have three other accomplishments. Nathan, who turned 18 this past week and loves Jesus. Shelly, who turned 23 a few months ago, sang this morning and loves Jesus. And Brian, 25, who loves Jesus. And they've gone their way through a world that is full of sin and darkness, and we've not protected them from that. And they've chosen to remain strong to their convictions, strong to what the Bible has to say, and they love Jesus. And I'm telling you what, that's all that matters right there. That's why I was on this earth for four people, and I'm grateful for that. It's neat to be a part of your life too. But these people are the ones that made the difference. So I get to introduce Brian today. Today is his first sermon in a church, which is going to be a lot of fun. I've watched him. I made him practice through it about eight times, and I watched it every time. And so he's good to go. It's got depth. It's got all the pieces you want. It's very good. It's not going to be one of those that you're sitting there going, oh, this poor guy, let's pray right now that Jesus comes. You know, something like that. No, not at all. But I've got to tell you this about Brian. He likes to mock me for crying. So the first Sunday we showed up at Bethel Baptist Church and put him in childcare, guess what he did? Wah! The whole time. When he used to play baseball, he'd get out there, and guess what he did? Wah! He'd cry the whole time. There is a crier hiding in there, I promise you, and it might even come out tomorrow, or today. But anyway, no, I can't tell you how much I love my son. And I can't tell you how much I love that he loves Jesus. And I'm looking very forward to what he's going to be sharing with you today. Before we do, he has a question he wants you to talk about. So here's your question for today. You're going to spend about 45 seconds on this. And it's not easy. I truly want to love and follow God more closely. But the one thing that gets in the way is fill in the blank. All right? So you're going to talk to a couple people around you, I know, not an easy one, right? This isn't, so what kind of pop do you like or something like that. It's going to take a bit. I truly want to love and follow God more closely, but the one thing that gets in the way is fill in that blank, and you'll know the time is done because a hilarious video will come onto the screen.
Why don't I start?
Huh?
The simplest way to put it, I have problems. I worry about diseases, so I have trouble touching things. In public places, it's almost impossible. I have a real big problem moving.
Talk about moving.
As long as I'm in my apartment, I'm okay. But when I want to go out, I get weird.
Talk about weird.
Talk about weird. Well, I get dizzy spells, nausea, cold sweats, hot sweats, fever blisters, difficulty breathing, difficulty swallowing, blurred vision, involuntary trembling, dead hands, numb lips, fingernail sensitivity, pelvic discomfort.
So the real question is, what is the crisis, Bob? What is it that you are truly afraid of?
What if my heart stops beating? What if I'm looking for a bathroom, I can't find it, and my bladder explodes?
All right, well, that was a scene from the movie What About Bob? In it, one of my favorite actors, Bill Murray, plays the hyper-dependent patient of renowned psychologist Dr. Marvin, played by Richard Dreyfuss. Later in the movie, Bob manages to track down Dr. Marvin on a family vacation. And after Dr. Marvin tells Bob to leave him alone, Bob panics. Like a petulant child, Bob rants. No.
Check it out. Look at him. I'm in really bad shape. Come on, please.
Bob,
please.
Bob.
Give me. I need. Give me.
Okay. All right.
As you can see, Dr. Marvin caves and agrees to help Bob. But Dr. Marvin doesn't follow through. Bob never gives up seeking Dr. Marvin's help and eventually drives Dr. Marvin to the point of clinical insanity. See, our soul is a lot like Bob. It is intensely needy and helplessly vulnerable. We are a lot like Dr. Marvin, constantly ignoring the cries of our soul. Think back to the first week when Dennis compared our souls to infant children. They're vulnerable because they're needy. If the soul's needs are not met, they're left destitute. 2 weeks ago, John Beaker reinforced this notion with Psalm 42, verse 1. Which reads, "As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, my God." The deer's longing builds to a single intent: find water, drink it, and be refreshed. It's the same of the soul. The soul longs to be fulfilled. So we know that the soul is needy. And this morning we're going to talk a little bit about what the soul needs. With a soul that is constantly in want, the question, what does the soul need, becomes a high-stakes question. Understand this. The unlimited neediness of the soul is not a bad thing, as it's the soul's nature to need. In fact, the soul only begins growing when we acknowledge just how needy it is. We do have a problem, though. Our souls have experienced the fall. Through the fall, our souls became susceptible to sickness, and an unhealthy soul is unable to help anyone. An unhealthy soul trying to help others is like inviting John Lester to run a major league hitting camp. Did I mention he's 0-28 on the year now? That would be a terrible camp. He doesn't know the first thing about hitting. He's a pitcher. His job is to strike batters out, not get on base. Well, just as the soon-to-be swept Cubs manager, Joe Maddon, has not left John Lester to manage scoring runs on offense on his own, God hasn't left us to manage our souls on our own. You see, the unlimited neediness of the soul is matched by the unlimited grace of God. He's ready to help. We just have to pursue him. Our question this morning essentially asks, what is the thing or things that pulls your attention away from God? When your soul feels needy, what do you give it? When it's hungry, what do you feed it? When your soul wants to do something, what do you allow it to do? Is it your job? Your hobby? Your desire to please others? Whatever it may be, it's knocking you off balance. So among all the things the soul needs, the first thing it needs is a center. A center on God. A soul without a center has difficulty making decisions. In Matthew 27, Pontius Pilate had the opportunity to free Jesus before his crucifixion. His own wife was urging him to do so because there was no earthly reason that Jesus should be crucified. Pilate thought he had his way figured out. His soul was not centered on God, so he tried to figure everything out on his own, so he brings out Barabbas, this notorious prisoner, and in an annual custom, Pontius Pilate was to release a prisoner to the public. So he thought, okay, if I bring out Barabbas, who's the worst of the worst, and set him next to Jesus and invite the crowd to pick who they want, they will surely choose Jesus because Barabbas is a maniac. Nobody wants Barabbas out. Well, we all know the end of that story. The crowd chose to crucify Jesus. And again, because his soul wasn't centered on God, he was confused. Pontius Pilate washed his hands of the situation, said, I had nothing to do with this, when really he did. A soul without a center has difficulty making decisions. A soul without a center feels constantly vulnerable to people and circumstances. When I was in high school, my mom made the only mistake that I've ever seen her make. On a Tuesday night, a school night, she allowed my really good friend Brian and I to go to a baseball game. 7 p.m. start, and we're in downtown Chicago. It's the first time that we went down to Chicago alone. So that's a bad start already. I don't know what you were thinking. But we go down for the game, and the Cubs were playing the Marlins. So we figured, it's nothing. But we had free tickets, so let's go. We go, and the game's going along smoothly. The Cubs are actually winning into the seventh inning. And then a guy comes out by the name of Rocky Cherry. We got all excited because we thought Rocky Cherry was going to be like the next big thing. We're like, oh, we're here for his major league debut. This, he's going to win the Cy Young and do what? No. Rocky Cherry blew up. He stunk. All right. The game ends up getting tied, goes into extra innings, and we're sitting here watching the clock because we need to catch the L back to Millennium Station so we can get back to Joliet home and safe. Well, 10th inning goes by, 11th. We get into the 12th inning and we say, this is it. We have to go after this inning. Well, the Cubs ended up losing, so we sprinted out of Wrigley Field, ran to the L, and we had allowed ourselves zero time for any problems. So God threw us a problem. The L broke down on our way back to the station. So we're sitting next to a guy who's in the same situation as we are. He needs to catch the train back home so he can go to school in the morning. Again, terrible parenting. He says he comes to Chicago all the time. So naturally, Brian and I, we follow him off the train, and he's like, yeah, I know the exact way. He didn't know anything, all right? So we are running around the streets of Chicago trying to find this station. When we finally get there, we're 2 minutes late for the last train of the night. Yep. So my dad had to come pick us up. My dad was not happy. Before he picked us up, though, we were running through the streets of Chicago trying to find a place that would just let us stay. We just needed a spot to go inside so we can make a phone call. You'd be surprised how many places won't let you in. So we were terrified. Every passing van, every skateboarder, every person standing on the street, we thought they were going to murder us. Okay? Again, here I am, a sophomore, on a school night, trying to get home. I just want to get home. Finally, a hotel let us in. We called my dad, and he had some words with us. But either way, our souls are a lot like that when we don't have a God center. Our souls feel constantly vulnerable to people and circumstances. A soul without a center lacks patience. The Israelites were constantly impatient with God. When their souls were off center, As you can read in Exodus and then again reinforced in Psalm 106, God performed miracles to free the Israelites from Egypt. That should be enough to keep them on track, right? Like, I mean, here he does all these amazing things to give them a new life, but they grew impatient. They worshiped idols. They ate food sacrificed to those idols, and so much more. Time after time, they left God in the rearview mirror because they thought their needs weren't being met. A soul without a center lacks patience. A soul without a center is also easily thrown. Going back, my dad was talking about how this is the anniversary of his last sermon in St. Louis. When we lived in St. Louis, we lived in a house that had a huge backyard, or at least I thought it was huge from my three-year-old point of view. At the back of the yard was a line of trees, and right in front of that line of trees, we had a swing set. I loved to go on the swing set. Apparently, I cried once or twice, but whatever. I'd ask my dad to come out and push me every now and then. So one afternoon, he comes out. We have a trapeze swing, okay? And I loved the trapeze swing because I loved, you know, whipping and seeing how far I could go. And when my dad pushed me, I could go even further. So I asked my dad, "Hey, Dad, can you push me on the trapeze swing?" He says, "Yes." So I get a vice grip on that trapeze swing. And I'm going, I'm having, the time of my life, laughing as my sister's staring at a caterpillar. You know, I'm dying. I'm having the time of my life. But all of a sudden, my grip starts to loosen. I'm 3 or 4 years old, so I don't have the strength that I do today, even though it's not that much greater. My hands are getting a little sweaty because it's summer, and I'm starting to slip. When I'm at what I think is the last swing, I say, "Dad, you got to get me down. I'm going to fall." He says, "Nope, one more." Once again, excellent parenting. I, being the trusting son that I am, allow him to push me one more time, and that one last time sent me flipping through the air, landing smack on my face, and I screamed bloody murder for 2 hours while I waited for stitches. Don't pity me. Our souls, again, are so similar. Our souls can't hold on, and it will eventually be thrown to whatever it tries to grab onto. Because what the soul needs to grab onto is God. So a soul without a center is easily thrown. Finally, a soul without a center finds its identity in externals. Rob Raines wrote a book called Intentional Walk, and it tells the story of the faith of the St. Louis Cardinals. One player in particular, Kyle McClellan, has an intriguing story. See, Kyle was an All-American athlete in high school in 3 different sports. So the kid had talent coming out of his ears. He was drafted in the 25th round of the MLB draft. And if you know anything about the Cardinals, you know that even in the 25th round, they find gems, all right? So Kyle McClellan was one of these guys that was, he had slipped in the draft, and now all these Cardinal fans, you know, we get all the information pumping in saying, yeah, this guy that we got in the 25th, he's looking good. He's rising through the ranks. He's doing really well in single A. We bumped him up to double A. He keeps rising through the ranks, and we're getting excited. He showed a great deal of promise in 2008 when he led the league in holds. But then Kyle had some injuries. He had to go through Tommy John surgery. And once he recovered from that, he had all kinds of terrible outings. So Kyle found himself bouncing back and forth between the major league squad and the minor league squad, and now he's out of baseball. But Kyle's story doesn't end with baseball. Kyle realizes that his identity is a Christian, a child of God, not a baseball player. Yes, he was there for a reason. He was there for a short time, and he did what God wanted him to do. But Kyle didn't find his identity, like so many athletes do, in their ability to play the game. Once he was done, Kyle compared his walk with God to that of his relationship with his dog. See, no matter what happened on the field, whether he threw a one-hitter or he got pulled after a third of an inning for letting up 7 runs, when he showed up at home, his dog was so excited to see him. His dog jumped on him, licked him, played with him, didn't care what happened on the field. And Kyle compares that relationship to God. See, no matter what you do, when you finally realize that your identity is in God, and you get your soul centered on God, he's excited just like that dog. He gets pumped up that you realize what you need to be. So a soul without a center does not, or I'm sorry, a soul without a center finds its identity in externals. Once you have a center, God's plan becomes clearer. Don't mistake that for easier, because it does not get easier. In fact, it becomes much more difficult, because once your soul is centered, now you are in charge of keeping it there. So the soul needs you to be a good keeper. Just as the keeper of the stream ensures that it is clean and can flow freely, you must safeguard your soul so it can remain focused and uninhibited. All of us who are able to answer the question of what thing gets in the way of us following God more closely have committed the sin of idolatry. All sin involves idolatry. Think about that for a second. God's first and second commandments relayed to us in Exodus chapter 20 are broken each and every time you put something before God and feed your soul things that do not draw you closer to him. Please don't take that as an accusation. Instead, take it as a direct warning from God that we need to be on guard at all times. We need to be our soul's protector. See, the soul is unable to turn away from sin simply by deciding to do so. This is also true of me and my eating habits. See, I'm incapable of beginning a half marathon diet by saying, "That's it. No more pop, no more candy, no more McDonald's, no more deep fried, no more cheese curds." When I try and stop all that, all my bad habits cold turkey, well, I get hungry for some turkey and all the other delicious Thanksgiving stuffing and all that kind of stuff. Instead, I must turn towards a planned diet, a planned healthy diet, suited to get me in shape for the race. Just as I am responsible for my body before a race, you are responsible for your soul, turning towards something if you want it to be, turning towards something other than junk food if you want it to be healthy. How can we accomplish this? Watch this video with me.
I drove to see Dallas one time to spend an entire day with him. And I was at a needy point in my soul. I told him I felt frustrated because the people at the church where I served were not changing more. And I asked him, what do I need to do to help our church experience like greater levels of spiritual growth? It's what I think about, write about a lot, and I really want that for our church. And there was a long pause, always with Dallas, and then he said, you must arrange your days so that you are experiencing deep contentment, joy, and confidence in your everyday life with God. No, Dallas, I said, I wasn't asking about me. I was talking about those people. I was wondering, what do I need to do as the pastor to help those people grow? I was thinking, what book should everybody read? What program should everybody go through? What prayer meeting should we institute? Dallas said, yes, John, I know you were thinking of those things. But that is not what is most needed. The main thing you will give to your congregation, just like the main thing you will give to God, is the person you become. The main thing that you get out of your life and the main thing God gets out of your life is the person you become. And if your soul is unhealthy, if it is wrong, if it is wrong, you can't really help anybody. You and nobody else are responsible for the well-being of your soul. So we talked about this some. I can remember when I was growing up in the church, learning the importance of having a quiet time when I would read the Bible and do daily devotions. And I talked to Dallas at one point about how I'd try to do that. And Dallas said, I didn't say anything about having a quiet time. He said, people in churches, including pastors, have often been crushed with guilt over their failure at having a regular quiet time or daily devotions. And then sometimes even when they do it, they find that it does not actually lead to a healthy soul. He said, your problem is not the first 15 minutes of the day. It's the next 23 hours and 45 minutes. You must arrange your days so that you are experiencing total contentment, joy, and confidence in your everyday life with God.
The main thing you get out of this life and the main thing you give to God is the person you become. You must spend time relentlessly working to turn your soul towards God. Since that's the case, you need to constantly ask yourself, will this situation block my connection to God? By asking the simple question in all situations, you become a better keeper of your soul. While we will still fall for the delusional lies we tell ourselves from time to time, determining if something will block our soul's connection to God rather than acting hastily makes us better equipped to protect our souls from dangerous temptations and remain centered on God. This question needs to penetrate every area of our lives. We can ill afford to stop asking it. Why? Because of my Mazda 3. See, my Mazda 3 was born in 2004, and when it was born, it got taken home by an owner. That owner kept it clean and shiny and waxed in a garage. Then in 2011, that owner decided to sell the Mazda 3. I bought it. When I bought it, it no longer had a home in a garage. It had to spend some time sleeping outside. And through that, my poor little Mazda 3 has seen its fair share of storms. Those storms have caused rust. They've seen broken windshields, dents, crazy amount of paint chips, even more recently, hail damage. But with each added imperfection, I become less worried about my Mazda 3's outward appearance. It's the same thing with the soul. When you allow any length of time to go by without asking, will this situation block my soul's connection to God? You allow your soul to become damaged, and you become less and less worried about its needs because you're disengaged from it. In order to engage your soul, you must feed it its primary need. So what does the soul need above all else? The soul needs to be with God. In fact, the soul will never be satisfied without God. In Psalm 107, verses 8 and 9, David exclaims, "Let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love, for his wondrous works to the children of man. For he satisfies the longing soul, and the hungry soul he fills with good things." During our trip this week, I noticed something cool. Rachel Beaker asked her dad if they could go on a walk more than once. Walks are great times to spend with each other, talking, getting to know each other, and just enjoying God's creation. Walking alone is fine, but Rachel wanted to be with her dad, and John wanted to be with his daughter. There's value in being with someone during a walk, just as there's great value in realizing your soul needs to be with God. Think about Bob again for a second. He was unable to overcome any of his problems without being with Dr. Marvin. Phone calls wouldn't work. Even assurance that Dr. Marvin would return home after his family vacation did not ease Bob's anxiety. Bob needed to be with Dr. Marvin to be satisfied. So similar is the soul. In Psalm 63, verse 8, David composes, "My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me." You see, the soul knows of something greater. In Soul Keeping, John Ortberg writes, "God planted eternity in our hearts so that we would not stop seeking life beyond ourselves." It's the soul that's the seeker. The soul searches for that something more, that something beyond ourselves. While our minds may be consumed with our idols, our wills with our habits, and our bodies with our appetites, our souls desperately long for something more and constantly seek a future that holds rest and eternal life with God. Deep down, the soul knows the true nature of God. The soul knows the message of Jeremiah 32, verse 40, where God promises his people, "I'll make a covenant with them that will last forever." A covenant to stick with them no matter what. And work for their good. I'll fill their hearts with a deep respect for me, so they'll not even think of turning away from me. The soul longs to see the fruits of that promise from the Lord. But until you center your soul on God, become the keeper your soul needs you to be, and acknowledge that what your needy soul needs most of all is God, your soul will keep searching and hunting and grasping, and you will never be able to experience true contentment, joy, and confidence in your life here on earth. Pray with me. God, as we spend this summer learning our souls, getting to know our souls, and interacting with other souls, I pray that you would help us to fulfill our soul's needs. Help us to be centered on you no matter what happens. Help us to be the keeper that our soul needs. And God, please put things in our lives that make us realize just how badly our souls need to be with you, God. Again, as we work through this together this summer, I pray that you would help us encourage each other to remain on this path towards you. And I pray this all in your name. Amen.
Would you thank Brian with me for his teaching today? So like we told you at the beginning, you have a card. And if you're planning on doing one of those baptism seminars, make sure that's checked off on the back. If you're new, save your card. Bring it to the door. We want to give you a gift. For the rest of you, servers are coming right now to collect the offering and place your offering in there as well as your card. As you do, I have a couple things to tell you about. Throughout the summer, we've been doing some of these short-term journey group opportunities, and one that's coming up is a group for junior high girls. So that's going to be in July. That registration is, you know, get online and get that done. It's going to be a great group where girls just talk about the lies that they tend to believe, with some women who will share some real wisdom with them. So make sure you get signed up for that. And then tonight at 6:30, we're having a prayer event here on the grounds, just kind of a self-guided time that you'll walk through praying in different stations. We'll be doing communion. And after communion, we'll be doing campfire communion where we'll have s'mores and all that kind of stuff. So two things for you to know if you're planning on coming. The mosquitoes, because of the water, have just become wonderfully ravenous. So I would get like DEET to the 1,000th degree and you'll be safe, okay? Make sure you bring some bug spray and we'll have some available here. And then if you have other things that you want to go ahead and cook, you know, hot dogs, whatever, just bring them along. There will be a fire and we'll have a good time with that together. So I told you already at the beginning of the service that our kids went to Green Lake this past week. Great time at Green Lake. And there are a couple of things I'd like to share personally about that. You know, I've gone to Green Lake for a lot of years. I've gone basically, wow, since the late 90s, I think. And people at Green Lake can be interesting. If they like what's going on, you don't necessarily hear about them. By people, I mean just people wandering the grounds. But if they don't like what's here going on, you do hear about it. And I've volunteered working there and whatever, and I've heard people just complain like crazy about other groups, especially kid groups. Our kids got nothing but nonstop compliments all week long from everyone. That's huge. That's huge, and it should not be overlooked. And the other thing that was really cool is the spirit this group exhibits in including new people, bringing new people in. I got to tell you, when Nate moved up into high school, it wasn't a group that was feeling real inclusive at that time. And overall, over the past few years, it's been amazing to watch this spirit that pulls in new kids, little kids. I don't know if you've noticed lately, but there's a pretty substantial size difference between a fifth grader going into sixth grade and an 11th grader going into 12th grade. And for those older kids to welcome in those little kids the way that they did is amazing. And it says a lot about the spirit and culture of our group, and it says a lot about Jesus to them. So that's really, really important. I'm thankful for both of those things. So Green Lake was a mind-blowing experience, says Vincent Van Eck. I mean, the hair is great, the demon eyes, we got to talk, man. This is like, you know, the next scary movie about to happen. Well, let me give you a movie that's not scary, okay? Here's a montage of what they did this week.
I want you as you are, not as you ought to be. Won't you lay down your guard and come to me? The shame that grips you now is crippling. It breaks my heart to see you suffering. 'Cause I am for you, I'm not against you. If you wanna know how far my love can go, just how deep, just how wide. You wanna see how much you mean to me? Look at my hands, look at my side. If you could count the times and say you are forgiven, it's more than the drops in the ocean. Don't think you need to say. I'm not again.
it drops in the ocean. It's time that we start again. Open your heart. It's time that we start again. If you wanna know how far my love can go, just how deep, just how wide. If you wanna see how much you mean to me, look at my hands, look at my side. Drops in the ocean. The drops in the ocean. Whoa, I am for you. I'm not against you. I am for you. I'm not against.
Yeah, roll again. Oh my goodness. I forgot about half that stuff. And let me tell you, I love the role that I get to play with your kids. So thank you for letting them come with me. As I keep talking about the week, I'm going to invite two people up on stage with me to go through it. So I'm going to invite John Beaker and Dora Kruger up on stage with me. So Dora has been one of my faithful every year peeps, and John got the opportunity to come with this year. And so what I'm going to have them go through, I'm going to have Dora give you a little insight on just how this year was different, and then John will kind of roll through what the heck this group can do. So,
well, Dennis already kind of hit on where I was going. The inclusiveness of this group. You can see the difference. We had a lot of students that we hadn't even met. Yeah. So it was really cool to have them, and immediately you saw the group just kind of take them in, whether they're small, big, in between. It was really cool in that. The other thing was the teachers, because you guys tag team this year between Brian and Bob and John. You guys connected so well that I know in small groups each day it just became more and more you could see the change in the answers. Mm. So that was cool. And the neat thing, too, is schedules. Man, we have a group who love their schedules. And what was so nice is day one, we get up there Sunday night, Monday morning, what does it do? Rain. So throw the schedules out. They had to come in and play. And I think that, for at least me, was key, because we had every student, all 41 of them, in one room playing a game. And I think that really set the tone of the week, because it allowed all of them just to get to know each other. It allowed all the newbies to be in the room and get to know each other. And I think that was key.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Well, I told Bob, actually, just before we were coming back, I said, you know, having not been on this trip before and going on at this time, it was a great week. And I don't think, you know, usually when you go away for a while and then you come home, there's kind of this post time away blues that you go through. And I said, I don't think I'm going to have that this year. Okay, I was wrong. I was amazed by the kids, by the way that they interacted with each other, by the work that they did. It was hard. Pulling brush is really hard and not really all that fun. But you know what? What I think we learned, a big part of what we learned, is that even doing things that aren't necessarily fun, when you do them together, can be fun. Love the spirit, love the heart of the kids, love the heart of the leaders. I mean, I could go on forever, but I'll leave it there.
Thanks. Yeah, so if you get a chance, if you had a student that went on the trip, or even if you didn't, be sure to catch John, Dora, Bob, Rachel, Chad, Mark Begwin, Don Yost, yeah, all of our, Shelly, Riley, all these leaders that came up and, what? Kyla, yes. all these leaders that came up and lost an incredible amount of sleep. I thought I was going to fall asleep in the middle of this thing today, but it was so awesome. And I mean, again, this year far away, it blows the last 2 years out of the books in my opinion. And again, that for them to go back knowing that it's their third year and they are going to have to do this hard work, and for them to come in with the spirit that they did, it's amazing. So again, thank you. Appreciate it. So.
I do want to call attention to the fact, too, that Shelley was not involved in, she pasted that video together and did a little 4:30 in the morning action there as well. So just really pulled together the spirit of the week. We'll show that at the end again, and then it'll be posted online so you can watch your child being thrown from the jet ski again and again and again and know who to sue for that. So the joy with which he throws kids from that jet ski is just incredible. All right, so we're going to wrap up with, we've been doing these soul exercises, these soul care exercises along with our series. So far, we've talked about taking some time for solitude, 10 minutes where you just turn everything off and sit and be quiet. And if you think about anything, you're thinking about that verse, be still and know that I am God. And you're just enjoying the stillness of being with God. Intentional slowing. I had to laugh this week. I'm driving down Route 6. I'm going 45 just like I'm supposed to. And there's kind of this car coming up next to me very tight. And all of a sudden, it boom, passes in front of me. And I know that car. And that car is somebody from church. And I'm going, no intentional slowing going on here. And I laughed. It was fun. It was fun. And I'm not going to expose who it is. They know and God knows. So, and then this week we encourage you to stare, to just take some time to stare at something magnificent. The stars of the sky, a storm. Boy, we got to see a storm this week. All the different things that we could stare at and be reminded of the magnificence of God. Now, this whole thing is cumulative, so we don't want you to like do one and then quit and never do it again. Keep doing them, keep adding to them. And this week we're encouraging you to do a little bit of screen control. Our screens are killing our souls. It's killing the souls of our relationships. It's killing the soul of the relationship that we have with God. We are so addicted to our screens. And so I'm just asking you this week to think about your relationship with your screens. There are a number of ways you could take this. I'm not going to give one thing to everybody, because some of you, honestly, you don't have a cell phone and you're just as happy as anything. But you have other screen issues. So maybe it is the fact that you are so addicted to checking that smartphone that you forget there are other people in the room. For you, I'd just encourage you that every time you go to peek at that thing this week, you'd kind of ask yourself, how often do I do this with God? How often do I just stop and pay attention to that God is there? How often do I stop and talk to God? Having some awareness of the fact that you're doing this all the time. Maybe your soul interaction involves this. You're tempted to text something to someone, and instead you say, you know what? I'm going to call them and let my voice do the talking. I'm going to go look at them eye to eye and make a soul connection instead of a simple tweet connection. Maybe your soul control or your screen control has something to do with what you're observing on screens. You know, a lot of where we are as a church is because we've allowed a lot of junk into our heads and hearts. There are certain things that believers should just never watch. We should just never view them. And it's time to control that and say, you know, why am I doing this? Maybe it's as deep and as graphic as pornography. You're addicted to it. And it's time for some screen control, because it's robbing the soul from your marriage and from other relationships in your life. And that's not just, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. That's taking some first steps to say, I'm ready to find some help and get out of this. So I don't know what it is for you today. I didn't want to just talk smartphones, because some of you say, well, I got that one licked. We've all got problems with screens in the 21st century in America. Will you exert some screen control this week and see what that does for your soul? I promise you, it will be life-changing. So, as we head out today, I want to acknowledge two people before we do. I'm grateful this morning that Kevin Comfort showed up. Kevin goes to church every Sunday. He just doesn't go here. He's the pastor at Judson, our old neighbor over on Black Road. So I'm grateful for the relationship that we're able to share with other sound evangelical churches and the leadership that he's shown for 18 years at that church. And then oldie but goodie, Jeff Buck is here this morning. And I'm just so thrilled to have Jeff here. I mean, my goodness, he's here. Jeff and I share something incredible. June 26th, we were both in a hospital, each having babies. Well, we weren't. Our wives were. Elena was born earlier that day, and Nate was born later that night. And we will never forget that relationship we share and so many other good things along the way. So glad he got to be here today and see Brian actually do something pretty cool. So we're going to go ahead and play that video again. It's going to start now. I'm going to have you stand, but you can stand and then go ahead and sit down if you want. Okay, so go ahead and stand. We're going to pray. And I'll head to the door and you can watch the video again if you want. Dear God in heaven, I pray that you will help us to understand clearly that our soul needs you. It doesn't need a phone. It doesn't need a movie. It doesn't need all the other things that we're addicted to. Our souls need you. God, I'm grateful for the week that our kids had and the leaders, for the way that they were able to serve a place that we love, but also that they were able to serve each other and grow more closely in their relationships, make that soul connection with each other. We're grateful for that. And God, I thank you today for the love you show for us, and I pray that we would never forget to show it to others. In Jesus' name, amen. So go ahead and say hi to someone and have some fun with the video all over again.
Won't you lay down your guard?